in the back here will know who we are. Decide later if that's a good idea or not, but hey, we took the job. After that, we'll kind of summarize where we are in the process, open it up for kind of focused discussion on some of the subject areas that we've discussed already, but then leave time for open topics, either from the group here or, I think most importantly, from people who are not on the committee, so we can get a chance to get questions and hear views, because we really don't have a public forum time, a formal way to submit comments, except at the meetings once the process gets rolling. So with all that out of the way, why don't we start, just go around the table, introduce yourself, who you're with, whether it's constituency, company, both, and then we'll get into the substance. That's the word, substance. It's going to be a long day for me. I'm warning you. Start over here.
Dan Rogers, Paragon Internet Group Registrar.
Chris Spelling, Net Earth One Registrar.
Roy Ballester, St. Thomas University, NCUC.
Fio Gurz, Real-Time Register, Registrar.
Tatiana Kramsov from RU Center, Registrar.
Christian Dawson, Internet Infrastructure Coalition, ISPCP.
Osvaldo Novo, ISPCP.
Mary Wong, ICANN staff.
Phil Moreno, Katten, Mush, and Rosenman, IPC.
There we go. Steve Metallitz, representing the Coalition for Online Accountability, IPC.
Don Blumenthal, I'm with the Public Interest Registry, ostensibly representing the stakeholder group, but that only means I'm the only person here from the group.
Graham Bunton, I'm from TUCAS, we're a registrar. Also, myself and Steve are the co-vice chairs, and Don beside me is the chair. And there's a couple more seats at the table if people standing in the back want to join us.
Benet Garcia, Haibu, reseller.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
James Bladel, GoDaddy.
Holly Reich, ALEC.
Volker Greimann, Key Systems.
Darcy Southwell, Domain.com.
Alex Deacon, Motion Picture Association.
Griffin Barnett, Silverberg, Goldman, and Bykoff, IPC.
Members in the back? Okay, if not, if people are interested, if we could pass the mic around for introductions, just so we get an idea of who's interested in what we're doing.
Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, 1&1.
Christo Hellas for NGO.
Julie Laurent from OP3FT.
Mirdad Sadeghi, Register.ca.
Leanne Kenny, nominate.
Tanya Bauman, nominate.
Miholo Floyn, University of Southampton.
Christoph Buch, German Civil Liberties Union.
Kim Olgunemi, Interpol.
Chris Parsons for Privatera.
Kevin MacArthur for Sierra.ca Registry.
Kelly Salter, Dada Group, Registrar.
Jeff Wilson, Host Europe Group.
Luke Edwards, also Host Europe Group.
Gary Parks, Cum Laude.
Mark Nowitz, Data Provider.
Gijs Barends, Data Provider.
Thomas O'Toole, Bloomberg BNA.
Luna Madi, ICANN.
Claire Anker, the Publishers Association.
Ivens Porto, Wall Host.
Fred Feldman, Thomson Reuters.
Cool. Appreciate it. Nice cross section. I made a pitch at a meeting the other day, and I was glad, good to see you. One person took me up on it, not coming to the session. Generally, is there any way we could blow that up? Good point. All I have to do is log into Adobe Connect. Well, I'll do the intro I was going to do here. Generally, we are nicely... never mind. I'll just cover it. Much better. Thank you. We started work roughly back in October, where we had our initial informal get-together. Really started work in January. And 6 months in, we are generally on track for our goal of having a draft report out early next year, January, February. We divided the groups, the questions that the GNSO gave us into groups. We're not going through them in order. That was largely, and this is mainly for people who haven't followed the process, obviously. We did that to make our discussions more coherent, more sensible. As it is, sometimes our groupings will require back and forth discussions. We'll come to a prelim conclusion and then have to go back and look at it again after we discuss related issues later. But at least by grouping, we cut down on that. We broke into seven groups. We have gotten through four of them already. Obviously, three more, but again, there will be some circling back. If I had to identify two areas that are going to be the most difficult, I think we've covered one and we still have one to go. Now, generally, we've reached preliminary conclusions on a number of charter questions, but I think these are the highlights. One of our basic questions, we've got proxy and privacy services we're supposed to examine or accreditation. I think we fairly quickly, nobody suggested that there was a reason for us to examine privacy and proxy differently. So we're proceeding as if the criteria for accreditation will be the same in groups. Let me just suggest here, whenever I say we came to an agreement or consensus or whatever, these are all draft conclusions. We will be revisiting as we start drafting the final document. We will recommend that ICANN will publish a list of accredited proxy privacy providers with contacts and contacts that are reachable, identifiable. We'll recommend that there be some way to label registry entries that are there. Proxy privacy services when they're used as registry entries. In some cases it's very easy to identify, but not always. There are a few ways to do that. I think we have some things in mind, but. Our job here is to recommend the policies. So a lot of things that we discuss, we may come up with suggestions and thoughts, but that's really going to be ICANN staff's role to come up with the specifics once our recommendations get through comment and are about to do the GNSO and the board. There'll have to be accreditation, validation. And we've got to be real careful with that term, validation and verification. So you have different meetings to different people. Some codification in contracts now, but it's still, if you're not familiar with those, you may not focus into the formal definitions. But they'll have to be validated or verified per the specs, along the lines of the specs in the RAA, 2013 RAA. Now, that would seem like it's just easy enough, given how many proxy privacy services, at least we know of, are connected to registrars, but many aren't. So the mechanics of that will be something we'll have to address. Services will have to relay notices required by an RAA or consensus policy. This is one of the areas where I talked about jumping back and forth. We have a question that at least suggests that where we had to address that basic point, but later on we will get into the specifics of reveal and relay involving proxy privacy. Customer agreements with registrants will have to set out rights and responsibilities, have provisions concerning termination in cases of transfer. We will have to look at issues concerning protection of the privacy element. When a proxy registration transfers from one registrar to another, because there potentially is a hole there where the information could be public, however briefly. There'll have to be designated contacts. It's not just along with just listing a contact on the website, ICANN website. And finally, we've decided there should be a list of malicious conduct that's appropriate for reporting to privacy proxy conduct. But again, that's something that we'll take developing either under later questions that we have to address or under, once it's moved out of the policy process and into specifics that will be the traditional ICANN policy versus implementation question. Pardon? Oh, sorry. You're hiding behind your mic.
Technically, it's Marika's mic. I'm just borrowing. So this is James from GoDaddy, and I don't mean to take the conversation into a detour here, but I do want to point out that during some of the other sessions here in London, we've captured, as we're running through the issues that this group is addressing, we've uncovered something that I think may be a pretty sizable omission from our charter and our mission, which is what happens when an accredited privacy proxy service with believed to be a base of customers is de-accredited. And that opens up another a bunch of interesting avenues about whether or not they are also required to make data escrow deposits separate from registrar data escrow deposits, and how that might be allocated to a successor privacy proxy service in the event, in a bulk fashion. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to tack that onto our list, but I think as a working group, we may have missed that one. I don't think it was in our charter, and I think it's only come up here in London in the last couple of days.
Well, I was just going to ask Marika or Mary to talk about our ability to add questions, and I see Marika has her hand up.
Yeah, and this is Marika, but I think that's definitely something that staff would also take as part of course, the accreditation program. Like, I think there are processes in place for the accreditation of registrars, what happens then. So I would presume that is something that is already at least on our list in the framework of an accreditation program. But we'll definitely take this as well back to our colleagues. And as I said, presumably the model that is being used for the accreditation of registrars may serve as a model here, noting that, of course, there are some particular items that would need to be considered. So maybe we can take it back as an item to see where conversation internally stand on that. And we do have, I think, a section that talks about de-accreditation and more what are the reasons for de-accreditation. But I think under that, we could possibly then as well review what the staff's thinking is for that part of the process and see if there are any specific concerns that the group has around those items.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We do have the section on the process of deaccreditation, but or the issue of deaccreditation, but what James is suggesting and Graham was mentioning add some issues that aren't explicitly in our questions.
This is Steve Metallitz for the transcript. I agree. That's the course to follow with this. One question I would have is, I'm wondering how big the problem is, because as you pointed out at the outset, we need to have an accreditation standard that deals both with affiliated privacy proxy services that are affiliated, really alter egos of accredited registrars, and those that are not. Those that are, I would think, I'm not sure there would need to be any special treatment, because there already are these procedures for if registrars become de-accredited, and they do have to make escrow deposits and so forth. So that may be part of the answer, but obviously, because we are supposed to be setting up standards for unaffiliated accredited providers, that clearly isn't covered by whatever the provisions are for registrars. Thank you.
Let's just leave it on.
James?
Thanks, and a good point, Steve. We're trying to kind of build the general case for the future when there are independent, let's call them independent or unaffiliated privacy proxy services. But I think even in the case where it is affiliated with a registrar, we'll have to take a close look at when those names are resurrected in the new registrar. Do they automatically inherit the privacy services of that registrar? Is that a criteria for selecting that successor registrar, or do they come back to life in an exposed state? And I don't want to mean to make this more complicated, but unfortunately, it's ICANN. Everything's more complicated than it seems. So, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thought I had cyan there. I think at this point, it's on our list of issues that we'll have to. We've got some groundwork to do. I'm sure we will address them. You know, these new questions. We've just got to work out the way we can do it, and procedural issues, substantive issues, whatever comes along. Now, we've got some upcoming or current things that we've discussed and not really come to any kind of agreement on, and then some challenges that we foresee. The one area where we've had, I think, the most contention, I think it's probably a good word, is the issue of whether all registrants should be eligible for privacy and proxy services. There are essentially three groups, I think, maybe a fourth. But for the most part, the discussion is centered around the traditional, well, three. One, yes, everybody should be eligible regardless of purpose. Or registrant identification or corporate structure, whatever. Everybody should be eligible. Now, the dichotomy that's been in place since I've been involved in some of these battles, and I worked on my first Who Is Accuracy paper in 1998 or 1999, which is really kind of depressing. The traditional discussion has been between, well, not everybody should be eligible, and there should be a distinction between commercial and non-commercial. You know, we'll leave definitions aside. A proposal that's gotten a lot of discussion in the working group is a variation on that. Non-commercial and commercial organizations that do not use their domains to conduct transactions would be eligible for proxy privacy. One of the best examples of a commercial domain that would be eligible is a company that's doing new product development and wants an internet presence but doesn't want a premature release of their plans. And then companies that do use their domains to conduct transactions, and again, there's definitions to be developed, would not be eligible for privacy proxy registrations. I'm going to loop back to that as soon as I finish this slide. We need to develop more specific guidelines and questions concerning what kind of malicious conduct would constitute abuse. And there's even been some thought about whether there should become some kind of uniform reporting form. The DMCA has been suggested. I pulled out a an abuse reporting form from the anti-phishing working group. So at least we would have some ideas to work from or to recommend that staff work from. We need to look at the expert working group privacy proxy recommendations to decide how to proceed with respect to them. Now, I don't think there's much significantly different. I don't think there's anything significantly different. Just it's only 3 pages out of 165 or 166, and really just gives some high-level suggestions that I think we're working through. Finally, we need to tackle reveal and relay issues, which I think is going to be another difficult one. There's all sorts of nuances there. I want to circle back to the start of this slide. Like I said, this was a contentious, our only really contentious discussion, I think. And I want to give opportunities to people in the working group to, if nothing else, question my description of the avenues we discussed and my characterization of them. Wow, this was a lot calm, Steve.
Drat.
Gotta get something started here. Thank you, Don. This is Steve Metallitz. You know, I thought what might be most helpful in just in terms of stimulating some discussion would be to look at these points, especially the first three, which, and I'm happy to give my perspective, and in some cases this has been the provisional position of my constituency on these, and see, because I'd be very interested to hear from others off the working group as well with their views on it. However, it's disappeared,
I was going to pull up the actual conclusion.
No, that's okay. I was just going to work from those bullets. On this commercial, non-commercial issue, I think you've accurately characterized what the new position is that has been put forward. I don't think that position has commanded a lot of support on the working group, though it has its adherents. And I think the reason is, at least from my perspective, it doesn't really solve the problem, which is that it's very difficult to determine whether a registrant is commercial or non-commercial, and even whether a particular use is transactional or non-transactional. There's a lot of gray areas. There's also going to be a lot of variations from country to country on how those points are defined. And I think that the general idea that in principle, anybody would be eligible to have a proxy or privacy registration is by far the simplest way to proceed, and I think while in an ideal world there would be benefits to excluding certain types of registrants, I think it's just the practical difficulties are insurmountable, even if it's at the level of transaction versus non-transaction. I think on the malicious conduct point, I wouldn't assume that we do necessarily need a detailed list. We do have lists now that are in the 2013 RAA and in the PIC specifications of the new GTLD registry agreements. They're not identical, but very close. And it may be that that's enough, and that the entities that have to deal with those, registrars, registries, that accredited service providers can also deal with that list and be sufficiently open-ended and flexible. And, of course, we don't want to one downside of a definition is that it might exclude new forms of malicious conduct that we can't anticipate now. So I would just put out there that we may or may not need that list defined. And on the third issue about the expert working group proposals, it's important to remember that I agree there's a lot of overlap there, but they're talking about how privacy and proxy services might be structured or accredited in a new, totally new environment, starting one that is really not like today's WHOIS environment and is a paradigm shift, and which is now being, you know, we're starting now the debate on that. And I know some of the other people in the room came earlier from the session with the EWG, and there's going to be a lot of debate about that. Our job is to look at accredited proxy and privacy registration, or what the accreditation standard should be in today's environment, which whether we like it or not, is kind of where we are and I think where we will be for some period of time to come. So that is one difference that we need to bear in mind as we look at these at the expert working group recommendations. So I don't know how many people, when you go outside the front door of the hotel, and you've seen that little stone pillar that is there, and it's a historical marker that tells you that this hotel is a site where, starting in the 12th century, public executions were carried out. So I don't know. I'm not trying to revive that process, but I did want to at least put some views out there. I hope people will shoot at them and give their reactions on these issues, because I think that would be useful for the working group.
Oh, now I got to stop imagining. James?
Thanks, James speaking. And I want to work backwards from Steve's contribution. And first off, just be very grateful. I think that participation, the trend that we've seen in increased participation at ICANN meetings would definitely decline if executions were part of the agenda, because I know it would involve contracted parties, for starters.
We'd maybe be more efficient.
Yeah, certainly. It would be led by compliance. I don't know. Maybe attendance would actually increase. Actually, now that I think about it, I do want to enthusiastically agree with what Steve was saying, and it kind of was percolating in the back of my mind when we noted on the list here about the EWG, which is that this is kind of in an embryonic state here of not being a policy yet. It's more just kind of a high level principle, or even more of a vision statement, the EWG report. And so while I think we should be mindful of what's coming out of that, particularly as it relates to our work, I don't know that it's necessarily something that we have to navigate as part of our recommendations. I wanted to address just real quickly the threshold question, because I think we have spent a lot of time on this, and I think as what's starting to seem like a, and certainly speaking for registrars is always a challenge because they're so diverse, but I think it's starting to seem like position of at least most of the registrars that also operate privacy proxy services, is that in addition to the practical concerns that that Steve indicated, there are even more than just determining what is or is not a commercial use of a domain name. I think, for starters, that a domain name itself is not a financial instrument, that the transaction is occurring somehow, either credit cards or PayPal or cash on the street. There's some other mechanism by which the financial transaction is occurring, and that system may also have its own dispute mechanisms. The registrant may be providing a marketplace for individuals and businesses to exchange and transact with each other, and therefore may be uninvolved in any commercial involvement. And I'm struggling to think of why they would need privacy, but I just want to say it could be possible that they are unrelated. And then finally, just that if it's a transaction that's gone wrong, it's a customer service issue. If it's gone really wrong and it crosses that line into fraud, then we need to, and I think we are on our to-do list, highlighting what we do in the case of illegal activity. So I think it would already be covered under that relay and reveal process, whatever comes up there. So I believe, and then finally there was that issue about whether or not political or religious or other types of donations constitute commercial activities. So I think there's a lot of, as Steve was saying, there's just a lot of practical concerns about how you would monitor this, how you would define it, how you would enforce it, and what the what the downstream consequences of that might be.
Thanks. Christian?
Bruce? So, since we're dealing with the questionnaire issues, I wanted to the ISPCP actually we took the time to focus on our response specifically to this, and I figured that it would be a good time to go ahead and actually read it. It's pretty short, so. The internet service providers and connectivity providers operate internet backbone networks and or provide access to internet and related services to end users. We're key players on the internet and have an essential role in its stability and development. The ISPCP constituency seeks to selectively respond to the GNSO PPSAI Working Group Community Questions for London. We focus comments only on Category C and seek to state unequivocally that we do not believe in a threshold for privacy and proxy services. We do not believe that it's appropriate for this group to address this, nor do we believe it necessary or practical for ICANN to require categorization of use of a domain for any contracted party. We therefore file the following official responses on behalf of our constituency. Category C question 1, no. Category C question 2, no. So, the ISPs stand behind.
I appreciate it. And just as a general note, all of our templates, the submissions to the committee, to the working group when we solicited them early on, are on the working group wiki page. So for anybody who wants to follow up and take a look,
appreciate it.
Question.
Oh, yeah, I can't turn. Please cover that one.
The mic on?
Is it? Yeah. So, for the record, Chris Tohelas, I just wanted to highlight that it might not also be only be the issue of who would be eligible for privacy registration proxies, but also the question how to define those instances who would be eligible to access the data behind the privacy proxies, and also define in a way also what is the proxy at all, because many companies at the moment practically function as a proxy, registered proxies for other services, even they are not accredited or even think to be as a proxy service. So you could also define these instances, not only the who are eligible to access or use the privacy proxies. Thank you.
Well, that's going to be part of the a lot of that's going to be part of the reveal and relay discussion that we'll have. That we'll have later on, but it's definitely on our agenda.
Okay. I just want to step back to the discussion a second ago by James about charitable organizations and not having to disclose information about their identity. That's one of the biggest vectors of fraud, actually, and in the place in the world where perhaps one of the most stringent privacy requirements are invoked, Canada, the name of the charitable organization, the charitable purpose, the cost of fundraising, the address, and the name of the phone number and contact person of a charity must be provided for a physical discussion about a charitable donation. So why would that not be required online? So I'm just curious why you would have invoked that.
James?
On the website, absolutely.
And why not in the registration?
Because it may be unrelated.
That doesn't make sense to me.
I can then mention a number of instances where parent companies will, if nothing else, will register a domain. And that's one example. The registrant may be possible to contact the registrant and the responsible party for the domain, but it may not really provide adequate information in terms of contacting the entity behind the website.
And if there's fraudulent activity occurring?
I don't know.
Well, we are discussing a mechanism for reporting illegal activity, and I think that would certainly qualify as illegal activity. And then in that case, the reveal and relay, or the reveal process, I think, would kick in. So it's a question of, is it a reactive thing when fraudulent or illegal activity is actually determined to be occurring, or are we doing that preemptively by just banning them access to the privacy service entirely?
Yeah, I think they should not be entitled to privacy service for that purpose. I mean, Stephanie has a comment. She's a privacy expert. I'd love to hear her comment.
Yeah, hi, Stephanie Perrin for the record. And I realize you're talking about charities which are not eligible for protection under the data protection law. Okay? But the conflation of information that's available as part of a charitable denomination, registration, whatever, And having this stuff available in an open WHOIS directories, you can't do that. Because you're talking about massive disclosure for unrelated purposes. If you have a legitimate law enforcement allegation against a charity that they are doing something fraudulent, then with or without the new recommendations of the EWG, you should become able to come down, state your case, and do a reveal on the charity. The information about charitable designation is primarily there for tax purposes. So that's the reason that that's available in the physical directory, and it may have to be available on the website, but that's different than the directory. So I guess I would like to, from a public policy perspective, and let's face it, ICANN's in that business, you have to maintain clear boundaries about what work we're doing, and we're not policing tax, and we're actually not policing criminal activity. We're making information available under particular circumstances for those purposes.
I have one important question to ask. Is there a right of privacy for commercial enterprise?
Mm-hmm. Under what laws? In what country?
Where?
Yes, and it's complicated.
Yes? The U.S.
Yes, and it's complicated, and in Canada it goes province by province.
Kathy, you want to respond quickly?
Hi, sorry to be coming in late. Kathy Kleiman, Fletcher Hilden Hildreth in Roslyn, Virginia. Under the United States law, there's a right of anonymous political speech, and that includes both individuals and organizations. So if a few people come together for political purposes and put out a domain name and website and lists and emails, yeah, they're supposed to be protected because the right of the speech and the marketplace of ideas, and even if they become an LLC, that doesn't change the nature of the communication in which they are engaged, which is non-commercial.
I was talking about commercial purpose.
No. Okay, commercial entity versus commercial purpose. Oh, my God. There we go.
We have a couple people waiting in the queue that we should maybe move on to. Laura's first, I think.
Thank you. Laura Jadid, Legit Script. I'd like to speak out as one of the few people here, I believe, who does support the mandatory not allowing people to have privacy proxy who are using domain names for a commercial purpose. First of all, I'd like to address the point that was made about whether domain names can even be used for a commercial purpose, whether they're facilitating. I think that a website very clearly can facilitate commercial activity. It would be a bit like saying, I don't actually buy anything, my money buys something. Well, technically that might be true, but without me, the money doesn't actually purchase anything. Without the domain name, without the website, there's no storefront through which consumers can purchase goods, so I feel that's a bit, I don't think that's a compelling argument. The question of practicality has come up several times. I don't think that's an issue either. I think the way this is handled is you ask people at the beginning when they're registering their domain name, are you using this for commercial activity? If the answer is yes, the privacy proxy service is not available. If they answer no, then it is. Obviously, people lie. But in the event that that happens, then people can file a complaint and the relay reveal process can commence from there. I don't think that there needs to be massive enforcement or people checking. I think this is something that comes down to enforcement and complaints. Of course, the big question is whether this is even desirable. I'd argue that it is. I think that there is a precedent for people who are with a commercial purpose, not commercial activities, but somebody who is actually selling a product in nearly every country. There are a few exceptions, Stephanie, I know you've mentioned some. But in nearly every country, corporations have to register because that way, if there's a dispute in the commercial transaction, people can get back to the party responsible for this possible fraudulent activity and file a complaint. I recognize the point about corporate speech. I don't think, and I believe this point was made by the gentleman at the end, that corporate speech in elections is equivalent of somebody who's actually actively selling a product should not be able to hide their identity in the event that there's some kind of dispute. That needs to be out there. There's a clear precedent for that in the physical world. I don't think this is terribly different. The question of whether there are exceptions, for example, charities that might need to hide their identity for political reasons, I think that's important. But these are the exceptions to the general rule. We can put something into place for exceptions for political purposes, but I don't think that we can define policy based on edge cases. Thank you.
I've got Wendy in the queue next. Please state your name when you talk for the record.
Thanks. Wendy Seltzer, and I want to
support the unequivocal, anyone should be permitted to use privacy proxy services, no matter what the category of their current or planned domain name use or status. And I think this discussion has helped to illustrate the reasons. There are different laws and regulations and requirements in different jurisdictions. There are different categorizations of the spectrum of activity. There are individuals who vary at the different times of their use of a domain, whether it's for personal, commercial, political, religious purposes. And I think our Who is and domain name registration system, no matter how it evolves under the EWG or otherwise, will never have the level of detail necessary to capture all of that. The appropriate place to apply those laws and regulations is at the application layer, if you will, at the place where people are making the use. If you want to regulate that a commercial website should publish contact information, tell people to publish contact information on the website itself and regulate it there. We shouldn't be backfilling these requirements into who is display or into who may or may not register with a privacy or proxy service. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. I've got David, then Volker, then Binet. Anybody else? Cool.
I just wanted to the difficulty we discussed about, this point about when you commercial entities versus commercial activity and so on is quite complicated, but essentially means that we you can't make a decision on appropriateness or whether someone is acting commercially. Mm-hmm. Until after registration and so on, it can't be basically this distinction becomes increasingly a complicated one, and largely one that must be done on a case by case basis, which means that of course you can have a proxy privacy registration because we can't make that decision until long after, you can't make the determination of commerciality until long after you would already have had to make the decision about whether they can use a privacy or proxy service. So,
thank you, Volker.
Yes, 2 points. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm actually agreeing with Legiscript on one point. We should not be making policy for edge cases. Edge cases being criminal use, because the majority of domain names are used legitimately. Second point I'm trying to make is that the domain owner does not need to be the user of the domain name. There are many cases out there where people are renting out the use of the domain name that they bought legitimately to a company that uses that domain name. Even I have been approached for my family domain name by a company that wanted to use it. I denied that because I wanted to use the website as well. But if you only want to use, for example, the email functions of the domain name and want to do not have a plan for using the domain name for hosting, then you might as well rent that out to someone who does want that. And I still do not want to have my information in the Whois just because the user of the domain name has a commercial purpose.
Thanks, Volker. Binet?
Binet Garcia, for the record. So I had 3 points, basically. One is that we seem to be discussing a particular kind of paradigm where there's a website and there's somebody hiding behind it somewhere else, where at the SMB level, the website is, you're like your pizza parlor. You know who they are. You know where they are. They're not hiding behind their website or their registration. Your tanning salon, your consultant, they're not hiding behind anything. So your access to their malicious behavior is a personal thing. What the kind of information they put in their RA is irrelevant to that particular idiom. The other thing is that we're talking about the scales of the different problems. It's a much bigger problem for these people who are, and I'll say, at the level of SMB, the difference between individual, a person, and commercial is so subtle when you're talking about how they use their websites and what they do personally, that you'd be making distinctions all day long to try to draw that line. The other thing is it's about a matter of the scale. We talked about the, you know, illegally malicious use as an edge case. But what's not an edge case is that when I, as a reseller, when I put my new websites out into the world, and that information goes out there, people mine their emails and they spam. Now, if I were to just draw you a bar chart of how often that happens versus malicious behavior, this is a much bigger problem I'm protecting someone for than the few times somebody might maliciously do it. And we talked about ways about getting around that and actually getting access to what's behind the proxy. But just my point is that it's a matter of scale. So there's that.
Thanks, Binay. I've got Laura.
Thank you, and could I communicate? I'm also flabbergasted that Volker and LegitScript agree on something. However, I would argue that, although LegitScript's focus is obviously on criminality, I don't think that this is just about criminality. That would be an extreme example of when you would want the information about a company revealed, but let's say I didn't receive my product. Let's say my product wasn't what I expected. I should be able to contact the company and be able to negotiate with them directly. That's a thing that happens in the real world. It's a thing that's happened in the real world forever. I think that should happen on the internet as well. Wendy made an excellent point about how they should list their contact information on the website. They should. The trouble with that is that we can't validate that. There is absolutely no way, without getting into really serious freedom of speech concerns, that we can ensure that the contact information listed on these websites is okay. However, at the whois level, there is a mechanism to validate. There is a mechanism where they're not... even in our system where we don't actually check, I don't believe they are legally supposed to put false information, which makes, in the worst-case scenario, it would make it possible to go after them. And in the best-case scenario, where it's a mix-up, but I really need to contact them specifically, I can. To the point that you don't always know what you're going to do with a domain name. A domain names can fluctuate back and forth between commercial purpose and not commercial purpose. I was under the impression that people can go back and forth on privacy proxy use as well. And again, I agree that it's impossible to enforce this from the front end, but I do think that a complaint filed against somebody using a domain name for a commercial purpose who is using a privacy proxy is fairly simple. Thank you.
Volker, and then we'll move on to the next...
I have to think about it just to...
Stephanie, and then we'll...
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Volker, you're making me feel guilty. I'm not going to think. I'm just going to go ahead and speak. I'm a stranger here myself. I've only been on this working group for a while. I'm not familiar with ICANN's remit policies in the detail I'd like to be. So can someone please point me to the document that indicates ICANN's scope for the regulation of electronic commerce? I was involved when in government with a regulation of electronic commerce in the early days, and I didn't think it was ICANN's responsibility to govern anything but the domain name. So, yes, there's a problem with criminal use of online commerce. But how is it ICANN's problem? And just because we could have good data in the domain name system to solve this problem, does that mean we either have the responsibility or the right? Thanks. And if I'm wrong, please show me this, because I just don't understand it.
Okay. Have you collected? I mean, I want to move on here. Do you want to? No. Okay, we are going to make an exception because we're somebody from community that we haven't heard from wants to speak.
Oh, I've got the mic. That's all right. There you go.
So, for the record, Kimo, Miami, Interpol. At first I thought that I'm not going to comment on anything, but since it seems I'm only law enforcement person here in this room, I feel that I have to say something. Anyway, as it was said before, these services they are mostly legitimate, and the users they are legitimate. But there has to be also a process to protect the legitimate use of these services, and this process means that there has to be ways or mechanisms for law enforcement to take actions, appropriate actions, to persons and services abusing this service, privacy and proxy services. So that's just my comment.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. All right. Ali.
I don't think any of our conversation at any point has ever said that, in fact, law enforcement agencies should not have access to who is. That really is not the debate. The debate is all about the extent to which, A, you can define a commercial purpose immediately, whatever, and B, if that should make any difference to your access. But nobody here thinks you guys shouldn't have. We just have to define what we mean by law enforcement, that's all.
Another interesting issue. Next on our agenda is to go through some of the preliminary conclusions that we've reached in our deliberations. We've kind of done that, but I'd like to at least carve out at least a few minutes to go through the other ones that we've addressed, just to see if we can get some thoughts from either additional thoughts from people at the table or thoughts from folks who haven't been involved all along. I will trust staff to go through those. And if you could quickly summarize, because I'm having real trouble seeing that. Or Graham or Steve, either.
I've been doing a lot of talking. Steve's turn.
Okay, I'm supposed to summarize what our conclusions are. Okay. The first one that I see up there, which is A2, privacy and proxy services are defined terms, and the staff can indicate what the source is, but basically a proxy service is defined as one in which no information about the actual registrant is disclosed and who is, and a privacy service, the name of the registrant is disclosed, but no other information, and there's forwarding information. So at this point, the most recent data we had were that something like 95% of the services involved are proxy services, and privacy services are extremely rare. But we were asked whether there should be a difference between how they are treated for purposes of accreditation or anything else. And this is a good example of a question where we gave a provisional response, but we may have to circle back. As we sat at the beginning of the process, we couldn't think of any reason why they would be treated differently. But we did say we may come across one as we get into some specific questions. So that's the reason for this. I don't know whether... maybe if people have any comments on this question, this would be the time to come forward with it, especially people that are not members of the working group who may want to add something that we've missed in our deliberations on A2.
We have a classic member of the working group to start. That's you, James.
Like, who are you talking about? So, James, for the transcript, and I've been thinking about this one a little bit more as well, Steve, and I actually think that we got it right. Our initial reaction or our gut may have been on the mark, and I say that because my understanding is that the distinctions between the two are not only, I would say, mostly irrelevant, but are also becoming more and more of a gray transition than a black and white line. If we define proxy services as containing no information in whois regarding the underlying customer, I think even a number of those services are changing to at least indicate that they are acting on behalf of a unique customer by some sort of a customer ID number or some other unique identifier, perhaps in the relay email. So I think that the distinction between the two is becoming very, very blurry, and therefore I think that it probably benefits the working group to treat them as interchangeable, because I think that the industry trend is that they are merging into one type of category. It's just semantics if we call them a privacy or a proxy service at this point, or will be soon.
Appreciate it. Any other?
Not got, no.
Okay.
Oh, nope, we do.
So I just wanted to comment that about the, this indication of usage of the proxy or proxy registration services, that those players, for example, some nation states or someone who wants to really to hide their registration data, they are not using, they wouldn't even consider using any public publicly identifiable proxy registration. So in that case, if you would require that that to be indicated publicly, then you would need to involve also the case of those kind of real proxy or hard proxy instances. Thank you.
Cool. Okay. If you could, yeah, or alternate. I just can't. Like I said, I can't read it.
Okay. Keep turning it off. Okay, the next question is B1, and if someone could scroll that up, thank you. And this is, as we mentioned, the question is whether the entry in who is should clearly show that a registration is made through a privacy proxy service. And a little background on this is that there have been a couple of studies that ICANN commissioned to try to measure the prevalence of privacy proxy services and for some other reasons. And it wasn't always possible to determine this, as sometimes it was pretty clear that this was a proxy registration, but other times it wasn't. So, and especially if we're going to have a standardization of Reveal and Relay, you need to know if this is one where you need to try to, you know, if you're qualified to get a Relay or Reveal, you need to know that this is a service subject to it. And of course the registrar, who would be under the obligation not to use an unaccredited proxy service provider, would need to know. So the idea was that there should be some way that a Whois user could tell that a particular registration was a proxy registration. And I think in general, we discussed a couple ways of doing this. In general, we kind of left that as an implementation question as to how this should be done, but that there should be some method whereby somebody who accesses a Whois record would be able to tell whether or not it was a privacy/proxy registration. So that was our preliminary conclusion. Any comments on that?
Stephanie Perrin, just to say that the EWG, for what it's worth, we recommended that be a mandatory field, I believe, so that we would know.
And that's one of the distinct differences between what we're working on and any new system. There may be more flexibility in a new system to add a field to Whois records. Right now, it's not an easy process. We probably have to be looking at other mechanisms for identification. Next.
Okay, no other questions or comments? Okay, so the next question is on periodic checks to ensure the accuracy of customer contact information. And another way to phrase this is to say what verification or validation requirements would there be for this contact information. And I think the significance of this is that, again, in a situation where someone is entitled to get that information revealed from the proxy or privacy service, it's important that we have some confidence that the information will be valid and verified, and you'll be able to contact the person. So the debate really, I think, within our group mostly focused on whether this should have the same requirements as for verification and validation of a domain name registration generally. In other words, the requirements of the registrars under the 2013 RAA the extent to which they have to validate or verify, or whether there should be additional requirements based on the fact that there will inevitably be a delay in accessing this information, again, in a reveal situation. And therefore, the chances that it is actionable need to be even higher. I think the tentative conclusion that was reached here was basically to parallel the what's in the 2013, or in a manner consistent with the 2013 RAA. You can't exactly parallel it because obviously there's some differences. We addressed the situation in which the service is a captive affiliate of the registrar. It's not necessary if the registrar has already validated and verified that information, then there's no need for the service to do so. And then we also recommended that an equivalent to the Who Is Data reminder policy be put in place, whereby the proxy providers, the service providers, would be required to tell their customers annually that they need to maintain accurate information, and that they should update it, and then the rest of it again parallels. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it parallels the 2013 RAA provisions regarding re-verification when there's a change. So basically our provisional conclusion, and again, this is something that we're going to circle back on after we've had the discussion about relay and reveal, is that the verification of this data would be similar to what's required for registrars under the 2013 RAA.
We've got James in the queue.
Thanks, James speaking. And just to add to that, I think that as a registrar with an affiliated privacy proxy service, we certainly like to reuse procedures and code wherever possible. So mirroring what is already in the RAA and other policies is just makes operational sense and doesn't require us to go out and re-educate the world again on a different procedure. The only hesitation I have, and I don't think it's a big objection at this point, it's just a little bit of uneasiness, is currently the proxy service in some cases will, because it is the information that is in WHOIS, will respond to the ICANN WHOIS reminder request, but then its customers would have to respond to a different type of data contact reminder request. So I'm struggling with how that is all going to work. But otherwise, I think this it's sensible to parallel this around existing requirements.
That's a good point, James. I also tend to agree, speaking as Graham from Two Cows. Wendy?
Thanks, and a question that I have that applies equally to the RAA requirements and these that would parallel them, but perhaps more strongly here, where if we expect that a significant user of privacy and proxy services would be individuals. I'm concerned about the security and stability implications of the verification requirement and the ways that it could be gamed to cause someone to lose a domain name if the presumption were that they should be suspended if they failed to respond. So to play that out just a bit further, the notification of bounced email, you could imagine somebody domain being subject to a prolonged denial of service attack such that they didn't get the initial email, didn't get follow-on emails, weren't available for contact through that means, being out of the country and being unable to respond to verify their information through the manual means. This could be used deliberately as a way to deprive someone of a domain name, and particularly when we're talking about individuals and small operations, they're less likely to have someone back at home who can check in a different part of the business that everything is continuing to function normally.
Thanks, Wendy. I don't think the gaming of that is something that we discussed in the working group. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. James, you had a response too?
Oh, just that, if anyone is perhaps thinking that sounds like an unusual or rare or exotic type of occurrence, I can assure you that is a very common occurrence where people will see a high-value domain name that someone doesn't want to sell, and they will find various ways to try and get it canceled so that they can pick it up in a deletion or drop type service. And unfortunately, we call that shaking the trees. And it is very, very common, unfortunately, that they will attack a domain name that they want to cause to be deleted, both through this policy and through invalid Whois reports, just continuously filing invalid Whois reports.
In the hopes that someone will miss one.
I don't have anyone else in the queue.
I just want to say I hear what you're saying and what Wendy is suggesting. I'm not sure that this adds to that problem. In fact, I think in general that it would be, I'm not quite sure how this would be vulnerable even to that. But I understand it as far as domain name registration is concerned.
I mean, hypothetically, Steve, it's possible that this would just create a new vector of vulnerability to that same practice. That if someone had to respond to both an ICANN, who is data reminder, and a privacy proxy, who is reminder, that the proxy service was no longer able to respond on their behalf, then that...
But the person would not respond, the person, the individual, would not respond to the, would not even get the who is data reminder. The service would get it. So, in fact, there would be, I just don't see how this adds to the vulnerability.
Well, it is, at a minimum, it's something we should probably introduce into our discussion when we circle back on this, on this one.
Maybe we can just agree on ensuring that mandated communications do reach the registrant so there's no duplication of efforts. And if the privacy service, for example, like ours, is set up in a way that all messages are transmitted to the beneficial owner, even if it's sent by the registrar, and the privacy service does not get that directly, then no additional messages need to be sent out. It's basically saying who is data reminder policy need to reach the registrant with the data in, of the underlying beneficial owner, and all other messages also need to reach the original registrant, the real registrant. So basically saying if the registrar is setting it up that it reaches the registrant, it's okay. No, nothing additional needs to happen. If that isn't the case, then an additional message would have to be sent so to ensure that the registrant is reached.
Any others? No, that's it. Okay, could we bring up the slide that showed the very brief description of our conclusions? We're at 15 minutes here, 15 minutes left, and since part of the idea here was to have the public, onlookers, comment, but most of the discussion has been from people to table, what I'd like to do is bring up the overarching list or the summary list, but then leave some time for open questions from the audience or issues we really should be maybe addressing or changing our focus or whatever else, and have 15 minutes for just throw things at us or ask us questions, whatever.
Anybody? Don't be shy. There we go.
All right.
A brave man.
Yeah, Kevin MacArthur from CIRA. A lot of this seems like we're collecting information, at least through the Whois process as well, that might be useful for a policing purpose in the future. And from a Canadian perspective, generally speaking, you don't collect information in the hopes that it may someday be useful. You only collect information once there's a use for the purpose of that collection. And so I'm curious in this, you know, differentiation, the reveals and all this, we're actually creating a process by which we're collecting information that may not be useful to a business purpose.
Thank you.
I was just going to ask if anybody wants to respond.
Yeah, I think that this gets back to the point we raised earlier that we're designing these standards for the current environment. We're not collecting any new additional information from registrants than is already required to be collected under the RAA. The EWG was asked to take a clean slate approach to this and look at the purpose of the collection and so forth and some of the points that you're raising. That's not really our remit. Our remit is to say in the existing world, where GTLD world, where
these are the data elements that are collected, and where there are privacy and proxy services that at this point are not subject to any standards, what should be the accreditation standards, including the circumstances under which the information that is collected but not made public should be made public. So that's kind of the environment within which we're working. I mean, we could get into the debate also about what the purpose of collection of this data is. I'm not sure that's a fruitful debate in this environment, but I would just say that the purpose is basically the same as it was since before the World Wide Web, when WHOIS first began, which is to identify and enable contact with the party responsible for an internet resource.
Hi, and in the sense that Stephanie Perrin, for the record, in the sense that I'm speaking on behalf of data protection, I'd like to align myself as being a law enforcement official here, because data protection law should be enforced. And I would suggest that when we actually do some kind of a compliance audit on those elements that we are collecting, it may be that we don't have adequate reason to collect it. So just throwing that out there. That could come from an ATRT report. It could come from a complaint that causes complaints to ICANN under data protection law. You name it.
Thanks, Kathy.
If I can just flesh out for people who haven't followed or been enmeshed in this stuff since who knows when, just to clarify something that Steve said there, you know, the contact point, or the reason for the contact way back when was the purpose was to get a hold of the person who controlled the domain strictly for technical reasons. If it went down, you'd know how to get in touch with to try to remedy the situation and get back up. That gradually morphed into more general purposes for contact, and then it just exploded with the commercialization of the web and the advent of the first hyperlinks either through the Mosaic browser, and it's been an interesting process looking back at that initial step to what it is now, or how it's used now. Nobody wants to look at the summarized conclusions instead of, as opposed to the detail we went through? Okay, I really expected more commentary. I'm not sure there's a point to going back to reading the template. It is up there. And again, there aren't formal opportunities to provide comments. If you're not in the working group, except for those of us who have been sucked into NOMCOM and will go underground as soon as this one is over, this meeting is over again. We're in the halls. Our information is posted on the website. And certainly, at least I, and I assume a lot of other folks, are open to listening in an informal way. We did, specifically at the law enforcement program, reached out to folks at that session Monday morning to come, and I'm glad I had to take her. We've reached out to LE to join the working group, and somebody from US FDA has, and hopefully more will, because we really are looking for the broadest representation on this working group, and it's not too late to join. I made a presentation at the Center, which is the European Association of CCTLDs, a few weeks ago, and asked CCTLD registries to join us. We don't cover CCs, but the European approach, at least, to proxy privacy has been much different from what we're talking about, independent services. But there are rules there. And as more and more of the CC operators are getting into the G business, because they're becoming back-end operators of new GTLDs, and DNIC is supporting .Berlin, for example, I think there's some valuable perspectives to come from that group and any others anybody can think of. I mean that. This has been a dynamic group. We're 6 months in, and we still have strong participation at our on our phone calls and on the mailing list, which is very unusual and highly appreciated. And at that point, why don't I just give folks 8 minutes back, which I think will be particularly appreciated if there are people outside waiting to take this room over. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Applause.